This program has been recorded for a blind and print-impaired audience for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Movie Reviews and Theater Previews. I'm your new host, Laura Arwood. And today, you'll be hearing about theater productions with audio description for January 2013. Then we'll head on to a rundown of the latest movies in theaters with descriptive video accessibility devices available at three local Regal theaters. The only live theater production we have in January this upcoming year is at DPAC, or the Durham Performing Arts Center, on January 13th at 1 p.m. And that's the Broadway musical Jekyll and Hyde, which will have its audio descriptive show on that day. Tickets range from $60 to $95 at the box office. If you buy them online, there's about a $9 to $10 fee. There are other upcoming shows in the area in February and out later in the spring, including The Miracle Worker by Carrie Players, and I'll be telling you more about that in the shows in January. And now on to movie reviews. The three local Regal theaters, White Oaks in Garner, Beaver Creek in Apex, and North Hills in Raleigh, all have descriptive video accessibility devices available in almost all of their individual theaters at no extra charge. If you are so inclined, you may wish to support their support of the blind and print impaired community with your movie-going patronage. You can call these local theaters for show times and prices, since those vary depending on which show you go to, which time. The numbers for each theater are: for Garner, White Oaks is 919-779-7499. That's 919-779-7499, Garner, White Oaks. For Apex, Beaver Creek, it's 919-362-7342. 919-362-7342 for Apex Beaver Creek. Raleigh North Hills is 919-786-4494. That's 919-786-4494. And now let's move on to the movie listings. And these listings will include the movie title, its rating, a brief description, which theaters it's being shown at. Most of them are being shown at all three, but a few are just at one or two of them. And I'll also include Roger Ebert's star system for most of the shows. I'm going to start with the shows which are new out since our last program. The first is Jack Reacher, starring Tom Cruise. It's rated PG-13. And it's at all three theaters. Roger Ebert has not given his star rating for this one yet. The description of Jack Reacher is: one morning in an ordinary town, five people are shot dead in a seemingly random attack. All evidence points to a single suspect, an ex-military sniper who is quickly brought into custody. The man's interrogation yields one statement: get Jack Reacher. Tom Cruise. Reacher, an enigmatic ex-army investigator, believes the authorities have the right man, but agrees to help the sniper's defense attorney, Rosamund Pike. However, the more Reacher delves into the case, the less clear-cut it appears. The next new movie out is This Is 40, starring Paul Rudd and Leslie Mann. This one is directed by Judd Apatow. It's rated R and is at all three theaters. Again, this one hasn't been rated yet by Roger Ebert. Its description: After many years of marriage, Pete, Paul Rudd, is the sole male in a household that includes his wife, Debbie, Leslie Mann, and two young daughters, Iris Apatow and Maude Apatow, played by those two actresses. As Pete struggles to keep his record label afloat, he and Debbie navigate a three-week course of sex, romance, career victories, and financial hardships, aging parents, and maturing children. They'll have to learn to forgive, forget, and enjoy the rest of their lives before they kill each other. The next new movie out, The Guilt Trip, starring Seth Rogen and Barbara Streisand, rated PG-13 at all three theaters, not rated yet by Ebert. Before embarking on a once-in-a-lifetime road trip, Andy Brewster, Seth Rogen, plays a visit to his overbearing mother, Joyce, Barbara Streisand, that proves to be a big mistake. Andy caves in under pressure to take his mom along for the ride. Early on, as the miles roll by, Andy feels nothing but aggravation at her antics. Eventually, however, he comes to realize that they have more in common than he first thought, and that Joyce's wisdom might be just what he needs. The last new movie that's out isn't really a new movie. It's a re-release of Monsters, Inc. It's being re-released because they now have a 3D version, but it's the 3D and 2D version are both coming back out in theaters. It stars the voices of John Goodman and Billy Crystal and is rated G. And it's at all three theaters. And Roger Ebert gave this one 3 stars. Monsters Incorporated is the largest scare factory in the monster world, and James P. Sullivan, John Goodman, is one of its top scarers. Sullivan is a huge, intimidating monster with blue fur, large purple spots, and horns. His scare assistant, best friend, and roommate is Mike Walczyski, Billy Crystal, a green, opinionated, feisty little one-eyed monster. Visiting from the human world is Boo, Mary Gibbs, a tiny girl who goes where no human has ever gone before. Now, a listing of the movies that have been held over since last time. The first, which came out just yesterday, actually, is The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, starring Martin Freeman, who also stars in the television show Sherlock from the BBC, and Ian McKellen. It has is rated PG-13 and is at all three theaters. Roger Ebert has not given this one a star rating yet either, but I do have a review of this one I probably will read at least part of later. Bilbo Baggins, Martin Freeman, joins Gandalf, Ian McKellen, and a band of dwarves on a treacherous quest to a distant mountain in this epic fantasy adventure adapted from J.R.R. Tolkien's beloved novel by the creative forces behind the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Peter Jackson directs a screenplay he co-penned with Fran Walsh, Philippa Bowens, and Guillermo del Toro, Richard Armitage, Andy Serkis, and Elijah Wood. Co-star. Also held over, Lincoln, starring Daniel Day-Lewis and Sally Field, PG-13, at all three theaters. This one got 4 stars, the highest ranking from Roger Ebert. Steven Spielberg directs 2-time Academy Award winner Daniel Day-Lewis in Lincoln, a revealing drama that focuses on the 16th president's tumultuous final months in office. In a nation divided by war and the strong winds of change, Lincoln pursues a course of action designed to end the war, unite the country, and abolish slavery. With the moral courage and fierce determination to succeed, his choices during this critical moment will change the fate of generations to come. Also held over is Life of Pi, starring Surya Sharma, rated PG-13. Also at all three theaters. And again, Roger Ebert gave this one 4 stars. I guess around Christmas time is when they put out all the Oscar fodder, so there's going to be a lot of good movies coming out around this time. After deciding to sell their zoo in India and move to Canada, Santosh and Jita Patel board a freighter with their sons and a few remaining animals. Tragedy strikes when a terrible storm sinks the ship, leaving the Patel's teenage son, Pai, Shura Sharma, as the only human survivor. However, Pai is not alone. A fearsome Bengal tiger has also found refuge aboard the lifeboat. As days turn into weeks and weeks drag into months, Pai and the tiger must learn to trust each other if they are both to survive. Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn 2, starring Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart. Also PG-13 and at all three theaters. Roger Ebert gives this one 2.5 stars, or 2.5 stars. I'm not sure this one's Oscar fodder. Bella, Kristen Stewart, awakes as a vampire from her life-threatening labor, and her newborn daughter, Resume, proves to be very special indeed. While Bella adjusts to her new state of being, Resume experiences accelerated growth. When the Volturi learn of the baby's existence, they declare her to be an abomination and sentence the Cullens to death. Bella, Edward, Robert Pattinson, and the rest of the clan seek help from allies from around the world to protect their family. Also held over at all three theaters is Rise of the Guardians. Roger Ebert gave this one 3 stars. When an evil spirit called Pitch becomes bent upon taking over the world by inspiring fear in the hearts of kids everywhere, a group of our greatest heroes, Santa, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy, the Sandman, and Jack Frost, band together for the first time, determined to stand in Pitch's way. More than a collection of storybook subjects, the Guardians are also a band of superheroes who possess their own special powers. Now joined in opposition of a common foe, the Guardians heed the call and combine their powers to defeat Pitch and protect the world from his campaign of fear. This film is based on The Guardians of Childhood, a series of highly anticipated books by William Joyce. Also held over is Skyfall, starring Daniel Craig and Judi Dench. And it's at all three theaters. And again, Roger Ebert gives this one 4 stars. I've heard this one called the best Bond film. Not the best Bond, that's still Sean Connery, but the best Bond film. When James Bond, Daniel Craig's latest assignment, goes terribly wrong, it leads to a calamitous turn of events. Undercover agents around the world are exposed, and MI6 is attacked, forcing M, Judi Dench, to relocate the agency. With MI6 now compromised inside and out, M turns to the one man she can trust, Bond. Aided only by a field agent, Naomi Harris, Bond takes to the shadows and follows a trail to Silva, Javier Bardem, a man from M's past who wants to settle an old score. Playing for Keeps, starring Gerard Butler, rated PG-13. This one is showing only at the White Oaks Theater. Roger Ebert gives this one only 2 stars. Gerard Butler and Jessica Biel, Uma Thurman, Catherine Zeta-Jones, and Dennis Quaid star in Playing for Keeps, a romantic comedy about a charming, down-on-his-luck former soccer star, Butler, who returns home to put his life back together. Looking for a way to rebuild his relationship with his son, he gets roped into coaching the boys' soccer team, but his attempts to finally become an adult are met with hilarious challenges from the attractive soccer moms who pursue him at every turn. And the last movie that's been held over that has audio description is Wreck-It Ralph. It's voiced by John C. Reilly. And it is being held over at White Oaks and Beaver Creek. And Roger Ebert gives this film 3 stars. Arcade game character Wreck-It Ralph, John C. Reilly, is tired of always being the bad guy and losing it to his good guy opponent, Fix-It Felix, Jack McBrayer. Finally, after decades of seeing all the glory go to Felix, Ralph decides to take matters into his own hands. He sets off on a game-hopping trip to prove that he has what it takes to be a hero. However, while on his quest, Ralph accidentally unleashes a deadly enemy that threatens the entire arcade. So that's our list of movies that are available in this area that have audio descriptive devices. And again, the three theaters that these are at are the Garner White Oaks, which you can call for times and prices at 919-779-7499, the Apex Beaver Creek, 919-362-7342, 919-362-7342, and the Raleigh North Hills, which is 919-786-4494. That's 919-786-4494. And now we have some time for a couple of movie reviews of some of the new films that just came out. This one is from the New York Times by A.O. Scott. It was published on December 20th, 2012, and it's a review of This Is 40. What's going on with Pete and Debbie? First of all, you remember Pete and Debbie, don't you? They were the designated grown-ups played by Paul Rudd and Leslie Mann in Knocked Up, a movie about the accidental conception and hilarious gestation of their niece. If you want an update on that child, who would be in kindergarten by now, you won't find it in This Is 40, Judd Apatow's sort of sequel to this earlier movie, and the fourth feature film he has directed. The baby's parents were played by Katherine Hagel and Seth Rogen, who have moved on to other things. This one is all about Pete and Debbie, who, along with their two daughters, occupy a big white house in one of Los Angeles's nicer zip codes, and who, in the course of a hectic week, undergo, well, what exactly? A matched set of midlife crises? A rough patch in their marriage? A flurry of first-world problems so trivial as to be an insult to the planet's struggling masses? A seminar in postmodern, post-feminist gender politics? Yes, sure, all of that. But to drop their troubles into such neat conceptual boxes would be to simplify a situation that is both agreeable and annoyingly messy. All of a sudden, and not, you suspect, for the first time, the stresses of work, parenthood, money, and intimacy threaten to add up to something big and scary. Pete's record label is in financial peril, which he hopes the success of a new album by the British New Wave stalwart Graham Parker will dispel. Debbie, who owns a boutique, suspects that one of her employees, either Charlene Yee or Megan Fox, is embezzling money. Peter's father, played by Albert Brooks, is a nudge and a sponge, constantly borrowing money from his grown son to support his do-over lifestyle, which features rambunctious blonde triplets. Debbie's dad, John Lithgow, who also has a second family, is a chilly, intermittent presence in her life. Then there are those adolescent mood swings of Pete and Debbie's older daughter, Sadie, Maud Apatow, and their skirmishes that break out between Sadie and her irrepressible younger sister, Charlotte, Iris Apatow. Hovering over all this hectic business is something vaguer, deeper, and sadder, a malaise in Pete and Debbie's relationship that leads them to question the foundations of their marriage. In a panic in the wake of a momentous birthday, Debbie embarks on a campaign of family self-improvement, limiting screen time, cooking healthy meals, and nagging everyone into a frenzy that almost matches her own. For his part, Pete clowns, mopes, and steals away to the bathroom to play with his iPad. cushioned by comforts that most of their fellow citizens can scarcely imagine, they nonetheless feel as if things are starting to go pear-shaped. Only metaphorically, the two of them are enviably trim in spite of Pete's weakness for cupcakes. Well, he bikes a lot. "Do you even still like me?" Debbie asks her husband in one of those many moments of vulnerability. An entirely plausible answer would be, "Who cares? We've all got troubles, sister." But I want to suggest that the movie's ability to foresee, even to welcome, a hostile or indifferent response counts in its favor. This Intifortie is an intensely, at times embarrassingly, personal film by a man who has worked hard, lucked out, and wants to share some of his happiness and its attendant worries with the rest of us. Mr. Apatow is, quite literally, showing off his lovely wife, that would be Miss Mann, and their lovely, talented daughters. And if Mr. Rudd is not precisely an alter ego, a description that might equally apply to Adam Sandler, Will Ferrell, and plenty of other male performers in comedies bearing the Apatow brand, he is at least a plausible placeholder. He is nice, but not cloying, goofy, but not dumb, smart, but not snotty, and good-looking in a way that doesn't make the rest of us feel too bad about ourselves. Mr. Brooks, a godfather of neurotic, passive-aggressive film comedy, once made a movie called Defending Your Life. Side personal note, I really liked that movie. Now back to the review. Mr. Apatow, though he absorbs some of Mr. Brooks' deadpan, buried joke filmmaking style, does not share his penchant for anxious introspection. The social milieu of This Is 40 is generationally, geographically, and professionally adjacent to the one explored by Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm. But any trace of that show's self-lacerating misanthropy has been filtered out of the Southern California air. A gaggle of funny troopers, including Melissa McCarthy, Jason Segel, Chris O'Dowd, and Lena Dunham, shuffle through the picture, offering up bursts of shtick, but there is more sweetness than cruelty to most of their antics. In other words, for all its crude jokes and on-the-money observations of the tastes and consumer habits of aging white Gen Xers, This Is 40 should not be mistaken for satire. While it makes fun of some of Pete and Debbie's foibles and blind spots, his immaturity, her neediness, their complimentary ways of not listening to each other, it declines to treat the characters as types or to treat their behaviors as symptomatic. The audience, of course, is free to take up the slack, to despise Pete and Debbie, even at the risk of hypocrisy. Look at those two fretting about money with a BMW and a Lexus in the driveway, the kids in private school, and enough left over for a romantic resort getaway and a lavish catered birthday party. In a town that runs on philanthropic fundraisers and celebrity activism, Pete and Debbie support no cause beyond themselves. They are complacent, over-entitled, and kind of mean, but the film's refusal of the detachment that would make them easy targets for judgment is finally a mark of integrity, even generosity. You are brought into a state of intimacy, of complicity, with characters you may find it difficult to like, but who, at the same time, require constant affirmation of their goodness. And they are good, or at least good enough. So is the movie. It snuggles up next to you, breathes in your face, dribbles crumbs on your shirt, and laughs at its own jokes. Such proximity makes it easy to notice flaws, and there are a lot of loose ends, and a few forced conclusions. But then again, the acceptance of imperfection is Mr. Apatow's theme. So, a degree of sloppiness is to be expected. That's life. As I mentioned earlier, I also want to read a bit of a review of The Hobbit, also by A.O. Scott of the New York Times. I'm not going to read all of it. Sometimes the reviews are almost more interesting than the films, I suspect. The Hobbit has kind of gotten not the greatest of reviews. This is one of those. This was published on December 13, 2012. In The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, Peter Jackson's adaptation of J.R.R. Tolkien's first Middle-earth fantasy novel, Bilbo Baggins sets out with the wizard Gandalf and a posse of dwarves to battle a fearsome dragon. Spoiler alert, they do not kill the dragon. Although, spoiler alert, they eventually will within the next 18 months or so because, spoiler alert, this hobbit, which is, migraine alert, 170 minutes, is the first installment in, film critic suicide watch alert, a trilogy. What's that old saying so memorably garbled by a recent president? Fool me twice, won't get fooled again? That is not to say that Mr. Jackson is a con man. On the contrary, he is a visionary, an entrepreneur, a job creator in his native New Zealand, and his Lord of the Ring movies, the last of which opened 9 years ago, is a mighty modern Geschmunstkonvert, a grand Wagnerian blend of pop culture mythology and digital magic, now available for easy, endless viewing in your living room. The Lord of the Rings was the work of a filmmaker perfectly in tune with his source material. Its too muchness, the encyclopedic detail, the pseudo-scholarly exposition, the soaring allegory, the punishing length, was as much a product of Tolkien's literary sensibility as Mr. Jackson's commitment to cinematic maximalism. These were three films to rule them all, and they conjured an imaginary world of remarkable complexity and coherence. This voyage, which takes place 60 years before Frodo's great quest, is not nearly as captivating. Part of this has to do with tone. The Rings trilogy, much of which was written during World War II, is a dark, monumental epic of good and evil in conflict, whereas The Hobbit, first published in 1937 and later revised, is a much more lighthearted book, an adventure story whose comical and fairy tale elements are very much in the foreground. That's just the first part of that. I just thought I would give you a taste. And now to wind up, just a little bit from the review, New York Times review by Stephen Holden of The Guilt Trip, published December 26th, which is interesting, 2012. Contrary to what the title and casting might suggest, the Barbra Streisand-Seth Rogen comedy The Guilt Trip is not The Shrew and the Cringing Meatball. There are no screaming accusations, no threats, or recriminations, no tearful apologies in this amiable mother and son road odyssey. What could have been a cutting satirical farce about domineering mothers and emasculated sons is a mildly funny feel-good love story in which mom's sensible advice helps turn around her nerdy son's foundering career. The chief pleasures of this mild-mannered dud lie in watching two resourceful comic actors go through their paces like the pros they are. Well, thank you very much for listening in, and I hope you'll come back in a couple of weeks.